Good morning, KRFY listeners. Thanks for tuning in to Community Conversations today, right here on 88.5 KRFY Community Radio. I'm Susie Prez, hosting today's pre-recorded interviews. Community Conversation is a pre-recorded interim show in place of the live morning show, which is temporarily on hold due to the coronavirus situation. Community Conversation airs each Tuesday and Thursday at 8 a.m., offering current local content of community interest. A few things to note. Recordings of Community Conversation are available on our website podcast page after it airs. And since these recorded interviews are hosted via Zoom, voice quality may vary. Thank you for your patience and thanks for listening. Today, I have two interview segments to present. First up is a discussion about healthy habits during this COVID-19 global pandemic and how individuals can help keep our community safe and healthy. My guests are two local licensed nurse practitioners, Nicole Grimm and Cynthia Dalsing. A second interview segment is a conversation with Erin Banal, Community Development Manager and Public Information Officer for Bonner General Health. Erin will talk about testing, when and how to get tested, our local hospital capacity and current status, and what to do if you are experiencing symptoms. So, we start with nurse practitioners Nicole Grimm and Cynthia Dalsing. Hi, Nicole. Hi, Cynthia.
Hi, Susie. Thanks for having us.
Well, thanks for coming back to continue the conversation and update the information around COVID-19. Back in mid-July, you were both guests on this show. At that time, you came in to encourage people to wear a mask, to help lower the infection rate in our community, and to talk about the medically proven benefits of wearing masks. So let's go over that again, since it never hurts to re-emphasize something so important. And either of you can talk, just say who you are as you speak.
Susie, this is Nicole. I support the CDC and the CDC recommendations to wear face coverings in public. We believe to stop the spread of COVID-19, we all need to wear face coverings, social distance, say 6 feet apart or further, and be really thoughtful about washing our hands and good hand hygiene. The importance of face coverings cannot be overemphasized. Cynthia and I both have been a part of a local nurse practitioner group who have been in support of our local businesses, supplying masks and hand sanitizers. And the research for face coverings is almost indisputable. The science is really supports this for the spread, the prevention of the spread of COVID.
Actually, there's more science out. Nicole can add to this. The face coverings are being shown to be even more effective in terms of protecting the person wearing the covering, but also protecting people you come in contact with. Before, we thought, you know, you're just protecting other people, but now they believe that wearing a face covering is also going to help the person who's wearing the mask to prevent them from getting the COVID.
So Cynthia,
go ahead, Susie,
Nicole. I was going to add to that. Initially, we said that face coverings were to just protect others. We are now learning the importance of viral load. And there's a study that's going to be published in the Journal of Internal Medicine this week, which draws on the benefit of wearing a mask, which reduces viral particles. Therefore, when there's smaller germs, there's a lower infection rate, and there's also a lower severity of the infection. So, for example, the more virus that you get, we are learning that that then secondarily is likely to create a more severe infection. So wearing a mask, lower viral load is likely to lessen the severity of the disease, which is what we all want. We want our county to remain healthy, to stay with no deaths from COVID-19.
So when you say viral load, and you're talking about that if you're wearing a mask, you lower the viral load, that may reduce the severity if you were to come in contact with the virus. does it matter what kind of mask you're wearing if that is the case?
Certainly N95 masks are known to filter more particles than a simple cloth face covering, but the research is suggesting that wearing a cloth face cover, whether a bandana or a buff, still reduces that viral load by over 50%.
50% sounds pretty good. I mean, considering, you know, we live in an area where we have less humans walking around, but nonetheless, if people go to Coeur d'Alene or something like that, and you say a buff, any kind of thing over your face, but I have heard also that if you're wearing a scarf, it should be doubled. It's two layers.
Two layers. You want two layers. I mean, there has been such a great mask-making program in our community. It's hard to imagine that somebody doesn't have a two-layered, tightly woven mask. If you go to any business in town, you can get one. They're right there at the door.
And I have a feeling that if they called you guys, you'd give them one.
We absolutely would. We have distributed only over 80 masks in the Sandpoint community, along with about 80 bottles of hand sanitizer. And the overwhelming support that we received when we went into businesses and told them we were nurse practitioners, we wanted to help them stay open. Would they like a gift of masks, hand sanitizers, and gloves? They were very happy to take this on. In fact, in the music conservatory, they actually were really happy because they were having camps with kids, and we gave them a couple of extra big bottles so that they could keep our kids safe.
Good job. So we're talking about wearing masks, but when should masks be worn? Where? Some people think that if you're outdoors, it doesn't matter. But then I have heard that 6 feet is not it. It's 8 feet or 12 feet. What is the basic picture?
I think to really just make it easy, Susie, is just wear a mask. Wear a mask unless you're outside completely by yourself. If you're walking downtown, I was downtown yesterday, even just walking downtown, a few people had on masks, many didn't, I did. And I just felt like I am being safe in my community. I'm also being a role model to say that I care about you, I'm gonna wear my mask. And I'm outside, but you know, I mean, we're asking women in labor to wear a mask and have a baby wearing a mask. Certainly we can walk around Sandpoint wearing a mask.
And if you're in your own home and no one's there except the people that you are living with, it's a whole different thing. That's why being home is a really nice place to be. Well, here in Sandpoint, talking about downtown, I've seen the same thing that you saw downtown, a mixed review on some people wearing it, some not. But also recently at our city council meeting, there was a discussion and a motion actually to possibly have a mandatory or required mask mandate. But a lot happened there. So there's a real diverse way of looking at masks. In fact, a lot of people are really set against it. What has been your experience with the spectrum of the mask wearing and the response?
So I have to say, Susie, I'm really grateful, even though I don't see the percentage of people in Sandpoint wearing masks that I would like to see, I do believe that it is becoming generally more acceptable. I really appreciated Andy Grote, one of our council members, comment regarding it's a kind thing to do. In light of a mask mandate that did not pass, wearing a mask is the kind thing to not only support yourself, to protect yourself, but to protect others.
What concerns me, Susie, is that not everybody is Andy Grote. And I was concerned that while he said, you know, people are going to be more motivated by a positive reason to wear a mask than being required to. And I really felt like it brought out a whole nother problem, which is that there was such a cheering going on when the no mask mandate was passed. And I thought, you know, we really have a bigger problem here of bullying, and that when people are trying to take care of other people, they're getting harassed for it. And so I think it becomes about being a human being and being kind. And what does our community want to represent? We don't want to be, you know, the COVID vacation spot, you know, that people are coming here because they don't have to wear a mask. I mean, we're all wearing a mask to help keep it safe for those other people. So return the favor.
And Susie, something else that Cynthia and I are both concerned about are schools opening up. We both strongly believe that as schools open up and we are going to be in closer proximity, there's going to be larger gatherings, we are going to be, as a community, at a far higher increased risk of transmission. And even though our numbers are trending down currently, which we are all grateful for, there is an unknown that's going to happen this fall. There's an unknown between this, the combination of flu and coronavirus. And I think as schools open, we need to be even more diligent in our wearing of masks.
Do you know if the school district will be requiring it? I know they have a phased process of opening. You can either be at homeschool, you can do a mixed hybrid coming to school, but do you know if they're going to have the children wear masks?
Yes. I emailed Tom Albertson for clarification, and all masks are required all through the high school, and I do not remember if it's what grade in elementary.
Okay, and I think we can refer back to the situation at the library recently. And some people said, well, how can they require us to wear masks when it's a public place? Well, they are the board of directors there, and the director are trying to keep their staff healthy and safe. And so as a building, they didn't close the library, they just closed the building because there was a group of people that were protesting having to wear masks because they had a mandatory mask to come in the building. They haven't closed the library because you can still get books curbside, but the building itself, they feel responsible to keeping not only their staff healthy, but anyone who comes into the building.
So I think we need to be very careful and watch our numbers after school is opening. And since we have now discussed this, and it was a pretty thoughtful, long discussion at the city council meeting, that if for some reason the numbers change when the kids get back in school, we certainly have seen other parts of the country like Georgia having to close schools a week or two after they've opened, the University of North Carolina, Notre Dame. I mean, I think it would be so disruptive for our students to start school in person and then have to back up and then go to offsite learning. I'm worried about that. I think the schools are being very careful, but we're going to have to watch that and react very quickly.
I think you're absolutely right. I do give them a lot of credit because this is one of the hardest things I can imagine that they've had to try to navigate and put together something, because they're being pushed by the parents. We want our children back in school. Of course, that makes sense. And at the same time, to do it in a way that keeps everyone, especially our children and the teachers, safe and things like that.
And you know, another thing that brings up, Susie, is that it's not like our schools are well-funded. You know, I mean, do they have these extra resources to make sure the building's sanitized, to have enough sanitizer, to have people who can monitor this? I mean, we really are putting our schools in a tough spot.
Absolutely. At the moment, things, as you mentioned, Nicole, things seem to be slowing down a bit as far as positive confirmed cases. And with the tourist season kind of coming to an end, how are we, where are we going to go with that? Do we still need to stay cautious and still wear the mask and do the other things that matter?
Absolutely.
Here's my slogan, Susie. Wear a mask so our kids can go to school. I mean, that's it. Go ahead, Nicole.
So overall in Idaho, we still have 29,000 cases and had 424 new cases with 298 deaths. In Sandpoint, in Bonner County, our number is at 195, three new yesterday. And those numbers are slowing down. But what's not slowing down on a healthcare provider standpoint, myself personally, is I am still testing a large number of patients. And that's wonderful. So the opportunity and capacity to test locally has significantly increased. And I'm so grateful for the partners in this community, including Bonner General, Boundary Community Hospital. There's a lot of great work that's happening. On the side of a healthcare standpoint, I test an average of 5 to 10 patients every day.
And why do you test them? Do they come in with symptoms or they've been around someone that may have had symptoms?
A lot of reasons. Some are going to visit, you know, a new university and the university is mandating that they have a negative test. Some is pre-travel. Others are symptomatic and have had known exposure in the community.
Okay. So I am going to ask one more question and then a final question. What else can people do to stay healthy? Obviously, we're here to encourage and give a picture of why to wear a mask. But what are some of the other things people can do to stay healthy as far as, you know, there's the social distancing and the cleaning, but paying attention, what else is it part of that picture?
I think our mental health is critical right now. Even before the mask controversy came up, the pandemic was very stressful for our entire nation and our entire world. And I think people are having a lot of stress and worry about what is this pandemic going to do to our life? It has changed everything. And so I feel like we have a mental health component to being healthy. I mean, you want to get outside. You want to get exercise. You don't always want to stay home. We need social interaction. We're desperate for it. I get together with a 92 and 89-year-old woman on Mondays and knit, and I wear a mask. And, you know, I think it's the highlight of their week because they don't have that much socialization. Churches are closed. You know, it's, I think we really need to take care of our community and our neighbor.
And I think there's an element of loving our neighbor. And in a time where it's really divisive, it's difficult. Everybody has very strong opinions on masks or no masks. To be able to love one another and show that love and is, I think, really good for the soul. I think there's something. We have a great opportunity before us to continue to show kindness and love for our community. And I personally believe that wearing masks is one of them.
Well, we've found out that you can't have a mandatory mask, but that kindness and responsibility, I'll throw that in there, is part of the picture. I'm not sure exactly how you bring that picture to people who don't know the importance of it, but I'm hearing you say that reaching out and getting creative in ways to stay connected is important too. And such as knitting with your neighbors. Great. That was a wonderful suggestion.
And Susie, we're all so fortunate to live in such a beautiful community. Staying outside and having social gatherings at a distance, keeping it small, reading a good book, eating a healthy diet, going for a run up at Pine Street Woods, limiting alcohol intake. And then there's something that I sit in front of many, many teenagers and adolescents, and I have the privilege of sharing their journey. And this isn't easy for them. And there's a component of just really validating that this is really a difficult time. It will end. We don't know when. And this is where we believe that the more that we wear masks, the sooner we wear masks and we really implement that, the quicker this will all end. But validating one another's feelings and experiences through this is also really powerful.
Right, and we didn't even talk about wearing a mask helps our kids go back to school. Wearing a mask helps our local businesses and our local economy get back to thriving. So it is kind not only to your neighbor who you help prevent get sick, but it helps keep those numbers down so that we can get back to that future place where life is a little bit easier. So anything else you'd like to add?
Thank you so much, Susie, for having us back. It's been great to kind of have this follow-up and be able to watch what's happened in our community since we talked earlier in July.
Well, it's always a pleasure. And anything else, Nicole?
No, I'm grateful for this ongoing discussion, and I'm also really grateful for an opportunity to just to continue to bring the science and educate others, and just giving us a platform to be able to share our experience.
Our concerns. Yeah.
Concerns. Okay. Well, I want to thank you so much for joining the conversation again. And I want to emphasize that we have a great health community here in our little beautiful rural community, healthcare providers. And I want to thank both of you for being some of those awesome healthcare providers that serve our and care for our community. So Nicole Grimm and Cynthia Dalsing, stay safe. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Susie.
Thanks, Susie.
And coming up, a second segment on today's community conversation here at 88.5 KRFY Community Radio. Stay with us. We are back with the second segment of community conversations here on 88.5 KRFY Community Radio. Now we are going to talk with Erin Banal, Community Development Manager and Public Information Officer for Bonner General Health, who will update us on what's going on in our community from our health care providers here in our town. So welcome, Erin. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yep. So, and really we appreciate you coming in to keep us, again, updated, to keep the community listeners informed. I have to say, from what I've observed, and it seems that our rural community hospital and healthcare groups have been very proactive with meeting the situation with this pandemic. Would you agree?
I do agree. We have an incredible team, an incredible incident command team that started at the end of February with the guidance from the CDC to implement incident command. And we have experts around the table from all facets of the hospital, which is incredibly important as we implement new protocols and guidelines. And it's been really fantastic. Our emergency room providers have done an excellent job. And especially in the very beginning, they were meeting at 6:30 in the morning, reading the science, looking at the data, looking at our overall footprint of our hospital and where we could best place patients if and when a surge were to come. And just working with our community partners and providers has been a really positive experience.
So that was kind of one of my questions was, tell us what the hospital's role is in meeting healthcare needs. I mean, what is that job or that role with COVID patients and the regular patients? You kind of touched on it right now, that being very proactive and looking at the information from the sources, the CDC, and setting up Command Central. But if you want to go into that just a little bit more.
Yeah, absolutely, Susie. You know, I believe the hospital's role is always to stand by our mission, and that's to provide excellent healthcare close to home. Bonner General Health has provided healthcare services to Bonner County for 71 years. We continue to provide emergency services, inpatient care, and outpatient care services, along with the implementation of a COVID-19 drive-through testing site, and guiding patients with the next steps in connection with Panhandle Health District as needed.
I was wondering about that relationship with Panhandle Health. So how do you coordinate and collaborate to continue to meet the needs, whatever those might be, if there was a surge or now, what we're looking at?
We've worked jointly with Panhandle Health District from the beginning. We have a community incident command conference call with Panhandle Health District, Kinnexu Health Services, and Bonner County Emergency Management every Wednesday and discuss updates, barriers that any of us are facing, and really take that time to identify opportunities for process improvement when that's necessary. When the supply chain had stopped, Panhandle Health District was able to allocate close to about 200 nasal pharyngeal swabs to us in the very beginning, which was incredibly helpful. And we really just collaborate, and communication is key. Communication has been significant during this pandemic. We're a rural community. They are a rural health district. So we have very limited, you know, people and staff. But I think that we've done a fantastic job as a rural hospital and working with our community providers all together. You know, we have to be working together in order to make this work.
Communication is key, I'm sure. And one of the things I was wondering about, or our listeners might be wondering, is, you know, with the response to COVID-19 and setting everything up, was there a lag in services to regular health patients, patients that might need surgery, or, as you said, emergency room? Was it still able to meet the needs within reason?
So in the very beginning, we had to eliminate all of elective surgeries. So unless it was an emergency surgery, there were no surgeries for, you know, 1 to 2 months. It kind of has all jumbled together, unfortunately. And that included outpatient services. We hopped on to telemedicine, and it's, you know, important for people to understand that 85% of our revenue is generated by elective surgeries and outpatient services. So, you know, when we talk about our local businesses getting hit hard, our healthcare was getting hit hard too. And that includes dental and primary care services. You know, our whole community, our whole nation was hit really hard with COVID.
So when you said I'm getting some weird feedback. So when you said that in the very beginning, the hospital had to shut outpatient services and elective surgeries, things like that, that was because everything was shut down.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Right. It wasn't because you couldn't meet those needs. It's that you were told no.
Well, and we needed to implement safety measures, you know, with the unknown, because right. So much of COVID is ever changing.
That's for sure. And I'm wondering, did the hospital receive financial support from the federal government during this time? How did you manage the slowdown and still stay viable financially?
Well, several of us took PTO of the management team, and that was not paid. So we took our PTO unpaid. And donated time that way. We did apply for all the PPP and those services brought by the government. I'm not sure on the financial, on what we got or what it did, but I know that we did unfortunately have to close some services due to COVID, and that was really hard. There were a lot of difficult decisions that had to be made.
Would you say now the hospital is back up for the most part and running, except for those services you had to close, pretty much back to normal?
I would say August is a good month.
Okay. Well, let's move on to probably a question a lot of people. We've seen on 3rd Avenue there, or 4th Street, I think it is, where you have your testing trailer and
yes,
set up. Where are we at now? That started a while ago, and it was probably pretty intense for a while. Has it slowed down? And at the same time, just give us a general picture of the testing capacity here in our community, what the needs are, things like that.
Sure. Well, I'll start from the beginning. You know, back in February when the CDC recommended hospitals around the country activate incident command, we identified primary focus areas, and testing was one of them. The challenge in the beginning was testing was taking a week to 10 days to receive the results. which led to any patients that were sick or with suspicious symptoms were put into isolation, creating a need for additional staff and a great deal of personal protective equipment usage, as well as anxious patients, staff, and physicians. Our lab manager, Sherry Proctor, began researching immediately in-house testing options for us and ensuring we had the most sensitive and specific tests and useful, meaningful results for our patients. So there's a lot of tests out there. We utilize the BD Max, which is the same as the University of Washington. Kootenai Health also utilizes that, and it's a PCR test, which tests the specific genetic material of COVID-19. So if it's positive, it's 100% positive. It's very, very sensitive. There's about a 2% rate of false negative. So that is, we have a very, very good test. It takes about 4 hours for that those results to turn around. That's been interesting. The problem, though, that we're currently having is the allocation of the testing strips and the reagents that utilize that BD Max. So we're very limited to who we put through our in-house testing. So we save that for admissions, specific nursing home patients, if there's anybody there. Right now, we have under 200 tests available. We have orders out. Every week we place an order, the allocations are going to other hotspot areas and not coming to us. So we utilize Insight Pathology and Lab, and we send the majority of our tests to them. And it's usually a 24-hour to 48-hour turnaround, depending on when the lab receives that specimen.
So that's the in-house quick 4-hour test. What are the tests that are given to someone who calls their doctor and says, I'm feeling some symptoms, and the doctor says, well, why don't we get you tested? And they go to the next, what's available for the regular patient?
Well, what happens is a provider will fax over that lab order to our lab. Monday through Friday, we have our drive-through testing, and that is over on Alder and 4th Street. The hours are from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. and then 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. We have a little hour break for those staff. It's just drive-through. It's first come, first serve.
You have to have that doctor.
You have to have a provider order. They are all set up online out there, so they have their computer. They can look up your order, pull it up, do your swab. We can see anywhere from, you know, that when we were seeing that surge in the middle of July and beginning of August, there were some days they were seeing 80 patients, testing 80 patients.
And has it slowed down quite a bit?
It kind of ebbs and flows. You know, some days are 30 patients, some days are 50 patients.
Okay. And
as of right now, we've tested, as of end of day yesterday, we've tested 3,602 people.
Okay. And when you get tested at the trailer there on Alder and 4th, what's the turnaround on that test as far as finding the
24 to 48 hours, because we will send that to Insight.
Oh, Insight. You may have already said that. I was. Okay. Mm-hmm.
The other thing I want to confirm, I just said we have tested a total of 3,602 COVID-19 tests. Some of those people are retests, so it's not
right
unique individuals. It's some of those repeat tests for people.
Okay. So, you know, in our community, we have a lot of people that wear masks.
Mm-hmm.
And there's even some businesses that require it. We don't have a mandatory for anything, but does Bonner General Health, more than a hospital, have a public statement or stand on the viability of wearing a mask to help lower the spread of COVID-19? Is there a thought on that?
We've taken several measures to ensure safe and effective responses during the pandemic. Bonner General Health continues to work jointly with the health district, our regional partners, and our community providers to ensure the most recent guidance is being followed. To further prevent the transmission of the virus, several measures have been implemented. So extra cleaning throughout all facilities and frequent cleaning of high-touch areas. While adhering to infection prevention guidelines. We screen all team members, patients, and visitors before they enter the building and limited visitors. We encourage social distancing to maintain CDC guidelines of 6 feet. We provide appropriate PPE for our team members. We require everyone to use hand sanitizer and put on a mask upon entry. So face masks are required in hallways, common areas, and clinical patient spaces. Patients who have COVID-19 and need to be admitted to the hospital are isolated with additional precautions. It's not our position to involve our organization in any decisions regarding mandates. Our position is to provide services that are best for our community, and we're really grateful to our employees and our community providers and partners for their support as we continue to identify and implement process improvements.
Sounds like a good path forward. Just as far as the pandemic, can we predict the path this pandemic will take? It seems to have slowed down or a little bit here in North Idaho, and with school starting, is there anything we're looking for as far as new outbreaks, or what are you looking at? What are we thinking?
I think the two things we know remain the same, and that's COVID-19 is ever changing, as will our processes dependent on the need. And as science guides us, the second is our shared commitment to the health and safety of Bonner County. And we'll continue to be fluid as we have to be. And we are prepared. We have mapping and outlines if there is a big surge. We work closely with Kootenai Health and our other 5 northern hospitals to make sure that we know who has available beds. And how we can best support one another?
Well, I think we've covered almost everything. Do you have any last thing you'd like to say to the listeners here at 88.5 KRFY?
Just thank you for supporting your local community hospital. We are here to serve our community, and it's our commitment, and we are so grateful for everybody that's just been so supportive during all this entire pandemic. It hasn't been easy for any of us. Utilize our website, follow us on Facebook. We put out a lot of great information. We want to educate our community on, COVID-19 and best practices. And we also want to educate you on other health choices. So follow us.
Sounds good. You're a good spokesperson for Bonner Community Health.
And thank
Aaron,
you.
Yeah, thank you so much for taking the time, Aaron Banal, and bringing us up to date on the local COVID-19 services and support from Bonner General Health. And I just want to remind our listeners, if you hear any odd audio, it's because we're using Zoom, because KRFY is also not using live broadcasting right now. We have a very small broadcast studio. And so, thank you. You've been listening to Community Conversation, which airs each week, Tuesday and Thursday at 8 a.m. right here at 88.5 KRFY Community Radio. Podcasts of the shows are available on the krfy.org website on the podcast link. Thanks for listening. Please enjoy the music of Otto's Eclectic Mix all day long here on 88.5 KRFY Community Radio.